Well, TNT is back after a been a week and a half, Tim, right?
Yeah, long time, week and a half.
Yeah. So I was in Rome. I met the Pope and met Cardinal Brandmuir, Cardinal Burke, and a bunch of great people. It's great to meet everybody out there. So we're going to talk about that today, especially the meeting with the Pope. But also, Tim and I want to talk about this conference that was held in Rome. I was in attendance for it. And, of course, Cardinal Burke spoke at it, rather controversial topic on patriotism, nationalism, immigration, Islam, etc. So anyway, it's kind of weird, Tim. It's been a while.
Well, it's been 2 or 3 months. That's how it feels.
I know. It's only been like, what, 10 days?
Yeah.
11 days, but
yeah, you've been around the world.
Been around the world and back. Went with Beckett. It was his second trip to Rome. And he loved it, man. You know, I've taken my other children, some of my other children there, and Beckett is just, he's a historian, and he studies Latin, and he's like trying to read stuff, and he wants to explore churches. And my favorite part, we first got there on the first day, and we were at, we had breakfast on the Piazza Navona, and then we went to San Agostino Church. Do you know that church, Tim?
Yep.
It's behind Santa Croce. It's where St. Monica is buried, the mother of Augustine.
That's right.
Because my wife is devoted to Monica, so we were going to go, as soon as we got there, and light a candle for Mom. So we went in there and we did that. And then Beckett, my son, who's 10, he said, "Dad, why'd they put a little altar in front of the high altar?" And he was talking about the Novus Ordo versus Populum altar. Because he's just a Latin Mass kid.
Right.
He didn't understand it.
Totally foreign.
It's from the mouth of babes, right? So, I mean, this is part of this new generation that's coming up that's growing up on a side stream away from the Novus Ordo.
Right.
Where even like a 10-year-old who's been accustomed in the traditional Mass sees this and is like, why would you take this beautiful church with a glorious high altar and put a little picnic table in front of it?
Yeah, and he's being non-rhetorical. That's what we call an enlightened ignorance.
Yeah, exactly. You know? He's not trying to be like sassy. He's not on TNT. He's not trying to be funny. He's just a kid trying to figure this out. And even to him, he's having taken one liturgy architecture class. He's like, "That's kind of weird. Why'd they do that, Dad?"
It's a good question, son.
I said, "Well, maybe we'll meet some people and you can ask them that question."
Yeah, yeah. Don't ask the wrong people.
So we had a good time together, father-son trip, and of course the big news was meeting His Holiness Pope Francis, and I still can't believe it happened.
It's wild. Did you ask him if he's a TNT fan?
I didn't ask him if he were a TNT fan. He did ask me to identify myself. Did I tell you that?
I thought you said something else. Yeah, go on. Say it here. He said, "Identify yourself."
Like, no, he didn't say identify yourself. He said, "It's kind of weird because it was all in a rush, and I thought I was going to speak Spanish to him, but I don't. I asked Beckett, did I speak Spanish or English, and he said, I think he spoke some Spanish. And when the Pope spoke to me a little bit, and I can't remember if it was in Spanish or English. He does have English capabilities. It's just one of those moments where it's so surreal." And you can't believe that it's happening.
Uh-huh.
And even like a couple of days later, I was like, was that a dream? That was real. That really happened. Man. So anyway, I mean, he came up to us and I shook his hand and I had the book with me. I gave him a copy of the book. He got the first copy of Infiltration and I had it signed. And I said, I'd like to give you a copy of my new book. It's called Infiltration. It's a history of infiltration of the church up into the current time. I don't think I said current pontificate, but I think I said current time.
You're in there a few times.
Huh? Yeah.
Your name pops up a couple times. How do you handle it? Yeah.
So I don't know if he opened the book or I opened the book, but I showed him where I'd signed it. And then I think he went to the table of contents.
Read this later.
Yeah. I was like,
after I'm gone.
No, I mean, this is important because already people on social media have attacked me from both sides as being too nice of the Pope or too mean to the Pope, whatever. But I mean, I believe he is the Pope, and I kind of feel like, you know, I fasted my entire Lent for him. The hardest Lent I ever did, no meat, fasting till three. And so I kind of feel like writing this book as a labor of love for the church and then being able to meet him was just kind of fit together, you know? So yes, I believe he's the Pope. I'm not going to like smack him in the face. I'm not going to call him out. There's people all around. I am going to give him this book that I spent several months writing. Whether he reads it or not, I don't know. But so I gave him the book. He looked at the table of contents, and then he went back to the cover. I think he was trying to figure it out, you know? And when he looked to the cover, he was pretty happy, and he kind of went like a, you know how he has that look, like the.
Yeah.
You know, there's like the Francis, like, it's almost like a.
Yeah, ponderous.
It's kind of, Italians do this. I don't know what you would call it.
Mm-hmm.
What is it?
It's a leitmotif. Yeah, it's their allora look, where they say allora, and they.
And what does that mean?
That word doesn't. It means therefore, but they say it like and it's when they're considering something.
Okay.
Maybe it's when they're sizing you up.
Yeah, that's what it was. It was that. And I think he
saw the writing. He saw the writing, so he's like, "You're not going to sign some other dude's book." So he probably, even if he didn't recognize you, he had to, just piecing this together, he was like, this must be your book, right?
Well, so then he took the book and he underlined my name on the cover. And he says, this is you. Is this you?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, that's me, Taylor Marshall. And he was like, you know, like he has that look on his, it's like the next version of that. Like, and then
yeah.
You know? And then, kind of felt things were going south at that point. Well, because I think maybe he looked at the table of contents and maybe started to understand it. Maybe he was just confused altogether by the book. It was kind of surreal because the cover has St. Peter's and like, there we are, you know, 24 weird. Feet from the facade, you know, right there. And the sky was actually like that. It was raining that day. It was kind of stormy looking. It was pretty cool. And so then I was like, well, I'm going to show some respect to the Holy Father. So I said, and I'd like you to know that my wife and our eight children, and I pointed to Beckett, I said, we pray for you every day for your holy intentions and the Holy Rosary. And then he was kind of like a little bit smiling and happy and all that. And then we shook hands again and he took the book with him. And then I introduced him to Beckett. This is my son, Beckett. And he shook Beckett's hand. And then he moved on. So, delivered the package. And, it was good.
Inconclusive,
yeah. Ganswein was right there with us. I shook Ganswein's hand, Archbishop Ganswein's, before the audience began. And then he came by with the Holy Father at that meeting with us. And, yeah, so that was it. Got a few pictures.
Yeah, I think I saw a couple of those bad boys.
And yeah. I think, you know, I want to be careful in saying this, but I, you know, when he looked back on the cover and kind of did his, if he's either figuring it out, but also the foreword is written by Bishop Athanasius Schneider. And so if he saw that, that may have tipped him off on the thesis of the book.
The friend or foe scale. Here he's doing doing friend or foe there.
Yeah, he's trying to. And then when he saw Schneider, he's like, you know, if it said like forward by Cardinal Casper, he'd been like, give me a hug. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, high five, bro.
It's like forward by Coco Palmario.
Yeah, it's party
maybe
time.
Maybe different.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, is he going to read it? I don't know. Does it go into a giant pile somewhere? I don't know. But I hope that. I mean, like I've said all the way over these last few months, I love for the man to be one of the greatest sanctified popes of all time who steers the church right through this whole crisis. It's not too late. It could happen. Pius IX, who's one of the great popes, he started off as a kind of a liberal. Mm-hmm. And he swerved right and became really amazing pope. So
Yeah, I mean, you could. There's a degree of abstraction that one employs saying that, and still means it. But the abstraction isn't insincerity. I mean, I remember when President Obama, who was a basically, you know, noted Marxist, you know, Alinskyite Marxist, was elected. When he was elected, I was still in Italy, living there, coming back later that month. And, you know, you can say as an abstract yet authentic token of, you know, being a citizen that, hey, I hope he's the greatest president in the history of the USA. You know, I mean, I hope he becomes a Catholic conservative and begins to govern as such and pisses off his constituency. You know, that doesn't mean I'm attesting that I think that it's a likely thing to happen. So that's the same basic, I think, premise with any pope. Yeah.
It's, dare we hope.
Sure.
Dare we hope. So, yeah, so it was good. And I mean, that was on Wednesday. And, you know, Beck and I just went to the churches. Oh, we did the Santa Scala with the boards taken off, which is really amazing. So the Santa Scala is allegedly the staircase that Christ ascended in Jerusalem to be judged by Pontius Pilate. There is some late dating on that. That's why people say allegedly. But anyway, apparently the stone comes from the right spot. And it usually has boards over it. I've done it several times with the boards because the marble's so worn down. I'm serious, Tim. Have you seen the photos of the marble? It is worn down like a gutter.
Yeah, it's impressive.
Inches.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Shot up on the screen of it. So, yeah, I mean, it was, and you know, people say, oh, it's going to be so much harder because the marble. Beck and I thought that it's easier on the marble than it is on the wood, even with the tunnels of worn out marble.
That's interesting.
Yeah, because the marble's kind of cold. Right, and it's almost, the wood was always like very wavy and hurt your knees.
Right.
So
I don't remember how early into my tenure when I lived there I visited the Santa Scala, but it's right near San Giovanni there. But very close to my old abode.
That's where you used to live, right?
Yeah, so you know that you're right between San Giovanni and Santa Croce, two of the Basilica, two of the seven. There's a park, right? That ovular park.
Yeah.
Long Oval Park. We would train for the marathon there, and then my house was just on the other side of Porta Maggiore, which is less than half a mile away in the kind of eastern part of the city. There, it's this tiny little big town, you know.
Yeah.
Very very small little city. It's cool. Yeah. Cool that you were seeing all that.
So did y'all do the Holy Stairs while y'all were there? Was that a thing?
Yeah, I think so. I think we did. I that's weird. I was looking at your pictures over the weekend or whatever, and I was like, I think we did these. I remember we hung out at San Giovanni all the time, and I remember looking at them. I don't remember. I don't have any like image memories of going up them on my knees, but I think I did it once or twice. It's cool.
It is, and they're going to cover them up on Pentecost, so I think it's just like a 2 month window where you can go and do it on the actual marble.
I didn't get out on the marble,
and there was a lot of pilgrims doing it. And we went to St. John Lateran across the street, visited that. It was nice. Then we went to the baptistry behind it, and we caught a bunch of baptisms. They were baptizing babies in the baptistry at St. John.
Oh, neat!
Yeah. But it was sort of the, you know, the priest would baptize him in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. And then he would say, correct my Italian, applause, something like that, applause. And then the place was pretty full because they were doing about six-ish baptisms. And then he would take the infant and he would do the Lion King. You know that?
Yeah.
And he would take a baby and he would do like a 360 with the baby, and the baby, some of the babies are like laughing, some of them are screeching, you know. So the liturgy of it was this. He baptizes them in the Trinitarian format, then he says the word applause, then he raises the infant and does the presentation of the infant to the crowd. And then he takes the parents and the godparents and sets them over on some chairs, and then he came over and he chrismated him after that. So
right.
It's pretty interesting.
Yep.
I was glad to see that people, souls are being baptized at the cathedral there in Rome, St. Sure. John Lateran.
Yeah, it's good. A beautiful church. I love the statues of the apostles at St. Yes. Giovanni there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big, yeah. Cool back to that church near where the baptistry is.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the more attractive posteriors of the big basilica there in Rome.
Yeah. Yeah. And the altar there is pretty awesome, too. That allegedly has the head of Peter and Paul on the top. You ever heard that?
Yes, it does. Yep. Yeah. Yep.
So, yep. So that was all great.
Good times.
Yeah.
Good
we times. Went to St. Mary Major. Went down and saw the creche. We didn't get out to St. Paul's. We just didn't have enough time. And then Thursday was the conference. And it was a great conference. It was Voice of the Family. And, you know, they talked about the crisis in China, the crisis in Ireland, pro-life issues, transgenderism, immigration, abortion, you know, all kind of things on the life issues. I mean, even not just the abortion issue, but all these other issues. And it was good. And the March for Life is on Saturday. So this conference precipitates it by 2 days.
Yeah.
And,
I read Cardinal Burke's remarks with great interest and had lots to think about in response. He gave a good address there.
Yeah. I mean, well, also, you know, one, I had heard of Cardinal Ike. He's the cardinal from Holland. He gave a good talk on transgenderism. And, you know, he touched this idea that the modern man sees himself as a non-sexed being that's in a machine. It's kind of Cartesian. We're in a machine. And, you know, if you want your car to be red or blue, you go get it painted red or blue. You know, or you want to put a spoiler on it or a loud muffler, you can go do that. Well, he didn't use these. This is Taylor Marshall's version of it, right?
The American version.
Yeah, this is the American version.
Yeah,
you want leather seats, you go put leather seats in it. You want a bass system, you put a bass. He's like, well, you know, if you go in and you just mutilate yourself and you're like, well, I don't want male genitalia, I want female genitalia, right? And you just modify your machine, and your machine is completely fluid. You can make it what you want to be. And just what... how contrary that is to Catholic ontology and Catholic anthropology. So it's really good. I mean, he did some philosophy there, and he did also state, which was good to hear too, that there are Catholics who have mutilated themselves and done all these procedures and hormone therapies, and Christ still has a desire for their salvation. So we should never, of course, give up on them. And there is a ministry to them, but we can never condone this kind of mutilation or hormone therapy in the church. So it was solid. And he was there all 2 days, Cardinal Ike. And he was at the March for Life. Only two cardinals that I saw showed up. Cardinal Burke, United States of America. Cardinal Ike, Holland. All the Italian cardinals, as far as I could see, no show.
That's horrible.
What a joke. What a joke.
Yeah. Yeah. So you told me that. I was disappointed to hear that.
Yeah. But they were there.
Well, yeah, on the, you know, my special interest, we talked even less for this inaugural return to TNT show than we do. Normally we do 3 minutes of prep. This one we did all of one.
But let's roll the video. Let's throw it.
Let's do it. Yeah, we got to get back. My special issue, of course, it relates heavily to Catholic Republic and all that. I'm talking about it, going on shows. You know, was Cardinal Burke's response to Pope Francis on globalism? And of course, we did a show on globalism after Pope Francis released that statement. And Cardinal Burke, I mean, you were there, you were in the audience. Sounds like he was frontally assaulting the Francis statement on globalism. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I was sitting there and I was thinking, you know what I was really thinking, Tim? I was like, Burke sounds like a TNT show right now.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, he wasn't holding
looked
back.
Like it. No.
Yeah.
I read, Yeah.
I was like, oh, wow, this is, like you said, full frontal. This is not beating around the bush. I mean, the Q&A was even more so.
Yeah.
I up until before we started running, I didn't know they'd released the Q&A. I thought the Q&A was still private. So, yeah, I mean, Burke was and, you know, Brand Mueller, too, he talked about contraception. He gave a whole talk on contraception.
Beautiful.
Let's just pause here for a moment, people. A cardinal, His Eminence, Red Hat of the Catholic Church, spent an hour televised and in front of a group of people at the Angelicum talking about the C word, contraception. He went all the way back to the Anglicans, the Lambeth Conference, 1930, walked that whole thing up right to 2019. Brand Mueller just knocked it out of the park.
Man.
You know?
Yeah. That's how rare is that? You don't get that from your parish
priest. You, yeah, I was going to say, you don't get that locally at the local parish. And here's a cardinal in the city of Rome at the Angelicum dropping science.
That's crazy. That's what was the response? I mean, were people getting pumped? Were they getting up and pumping their fists like Arsenio Hall?
Completely. I mean, when they sat down, Cardinal Ike, and Bishop Athanasius Schneider, pardon me, he live streamed in. He gave a talk. But they put the three cardinals at the end of these talks together. Actually, Brand Mueller, he doesn't move around well. I met Cardinal Brand Mueller, gave him a copy of Infiltration. He said, what will happen if Pope Francis reads this? So we both kind of went,
well, but I tempted the faith, so I just handed it to him.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. He's a good guy. He's very grandfatherly and kind, and he was super nice to Beckett, and just a really, I think, smart, and he's noble. He has like this European, there's a gravitas, but a sweetness to him. I don't know how to explain it.
Yeah, true nobility. It's got both aspects, magnanimity. Did he know who you were? Did you?
I don't know. I don't think so. I don't know.
Huh.
Cardinal Burke did. Cardinal was like, hey, Taylor, you know, when he saw me. And I gave him a copy of the book, too. But after they gave that panel, they were just bum-rushed by 200 people. It's just crowds and crowds and crowds of people. Especially around Burke, because I think people realized, obviously, transgenderism and contraception are on the docket. But when you talk against migration and specifically start talking about Islamic immigration in the context of Europe and Catholicism, everyone in the room, like their Pope Francis siren was going off. And people picked up on it. People picked up on it over the last week. Or it hadn't even been a week. Last few days.
The Francis talk had been less than, I think it was less than 2 weeks before that. So it's not even like he waited, you know, for the talk to go stale on the shelf for a month or 2 months and then be like, he could kind of preserve what they call in the military plausible deniability and say, that's right. Did he talk about that a few months back? Oops, I forgot it. What was his position? I kind of forgot too. He's actually frontally assaulting it, addressing it.
Yes.
Lots of really interesting statements. I'd like to get into it. I didn't know until shortly before I sent it to you that the after comments, which you'd mentioned to me, we were texting from overseas, were available. And you were right. Those are even juicier than what he said in the statement itself. So all in all, it's impressive that he took the bull by the horns here.
And I'm looking at those questions, and I'm not sure that they're exhaustive. It seemed like there was more to it than what we're seeing here on its LifeSite, right? What they published.
Yes.
By the way, LifeSite, my hat is off to all you guys at the LifeSite team. Diane Montagna, John Henry Weston, everybody. They were all over the place filming, organizing. I mean, LifeSite News, props.
They do good
amazing.
Work.
They have an amazing operation over there. Diane, I mean, it's awesome. Good work. I'm not sure what LifeSite's put up here, if it's the full. It seemed like it went like a whole hour, and there's no way what they've put up here is an hour.
Well, they put up eight questions, and they seem to be truncated abbreviated versions of the question. So right. Well, I'm sure that was probably a prerequisite for permission to publish.
Yeah.
Like you don't get to cover everything off, you know, because it's kind of off the mic. That's Q&As are presumed to be that. So,
yeah, because there was a question that was directly about the Pope, and I don't see it on here.
Yeah.
So, which is fine. You want to go through some of these?
Yeah, especially the first one, I think, is a really important, timely, worldly question about which reasonable minds can differ. And I don't know if there's any chance that I would love to open a broader dialogue, not just with Cardinal Burke himself, who you know, obviously we respect and admire so much here on TNT, but even the guys more on the opposite end of the spectrum on this, the faithful conservatives like Patrick Deneen at Notre Dame. This is sort of the broader issue is, okay, forget liberal Catholics, because they're just, you know, they'll be liberals simplicitaire within a generation. I think Deneen is the one that said that. Forget secularists talking about politics and geopolitics, national politics. Let's focus in on the subset of faithful Catholics. And what people need to understand is that in the world of faithful Catholics, there's this whole, there's still a spectrum on nationalism, globalism, right?
Yep.
I mean, you have to acknowledge, if you're a faithful Catholic, nationalism, that you know, nations are sovereign. Patriotism is one of Thomas Aquinas's virtues, one of the virtues of the church.
Yeah, and let me say, Burke did a Thomistic analysis of patriotism as a virtue of piety, which is which again falls under justice. I mean, just the way we've handled it before and stacked it up and shown how this whole thing is oriented towards a virtue ethic, Burke did that. So props to that. I mean, he did a really good job showing, and he said in the talk, some in the church today would say that patriotism is a sin.
Right.
He goes, but it's not. It's the opposite. It is a virtue. All of our Catholic forebears would have recognized it as a virtue. In the medieval times, if you were a Frenchman, you honored the French.
Right.
And even more than that, your local, you know, Provence or wherever you lived, you know, you honored that. And he also talked about how it's derived from our honor towards our mother and our father.
Right.
Our people and our fatherland.
Right.
And there must be an honor there. That's where you were born. Like, you were born of a mother and a father, but you're also born in this dirt and this geography and these
which
people.
Matters.
This town. Yeah. Yes. So, I mean, I just want to say he rooted the whole thing properly. It was legit.
Yeah. I saw those statements in his main address, and, you know, that's great. And he does, I guess you're right. He starts out addressing the broader question and countenancing the question put forward by worldwide liberals inside and outside the church just by saying patriotism good. But when he, it's really in these questions afterwards where he gets to, I think, the intellectually stimulating question where reasonable minds can actually differ. You can't differ on patriotism. It's a Christian virtue. There is no.
It seems that people do, Tim. Well, here's what they've done, and Burke put his finger on this. Patriotism is kind of good, but we push it in the closet. Nationalism is this huge mortal sin.
Right.
And Burke did tease this out a little bit, but he didn't systematically do it. And it's something that you and I have never done either. I don't know of anyone who's actually treated it, because it seems to me that nationalism is now the boogeyman. Right. Mm-hmm. You can't say I'm nationalistic, because you're basically a Nazi at that point if you say nationalistic. Right. But you can say you're patriotic. Is right. there a difference?
There's not a real one. So liberal, I mean, this is one of the neologisms of 2016, right? They came up with white nationalists. No one, right. no one knows what this means. This is just a term for deplorables. This is a more technical sounding term that CSNBC, MSNBC came up with for what Hillary called deplorables, people that voted for Trump. And nationalism has never been parsed from patriotism because I don't believe there is a reasonable way to pull them apart, right? Patriotism is love for one's country. Nationalism is love for one's nation or intense feelings of love for one's nation. You could define the disputed question into it and say nationalism is a negative way of loving your country. But no, patriotism is supposed to be just feelings you have towards sort of all people of goodwill, the ones that live inside and outside of your country. That's what the people that gave us this dichotomy would say. I'd say
yeah.
No.
Yeah, it seems that nationalism is going to mean I love my country, ergo I hate all other countries. That's how we're kind of told, you know, at the CNN understanding of white nationalists means they can't call them white supremacists because none of them actually believe that they're supreme race. They're not like neo-Nazis. So they created this word white nationalists, which means we love white nations and we hate other nations. Right?
Right. Right.
And then I guess patriotism means you cover your heart for the anthem and put up a flag on the 4th of July. Is that what patriotism is? I don't know.
I think the walking distinction, just to cut right to the chase, is according to the rules for radicals of the left and the way that they instantiate the rules for radicals by making new terms, the distinction is really about borders. And patriotism is allowable if you're open borders. I love my country, but open borders are evil.
Because patriotism doesn't have the word nation in it. That's right. That's why the Alinskyites have carved it out that way.
That's right.
We ain't
nationalism
buying it.
Is circumscribed by I love my country, and part of patriotism, the way Aquinas would define it, or any of the ancients, means borders and sovereign borders, language, culture, to borrow Michael Savage's erstwhile term from about 10 years ago. This is defined into what a nation is. And if you love your nation, they're one and the same. But the liberals are attempting to define out defensible borders.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in Latin, patria, it's just your fatherland.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Patriotism. Yeah. Patriotism.
And nation,
yeah, fatherland.
Natio, I mean, it's just where you're born. I mean, the words aren't that, they're not loaded. They're not that different. So, yeah, I mean, this is, you're right. This is an Alinskyite shell game with language in order to gain power and to defuse your enemies, you nationalists.
Right. And to push globalism. So I wasn't insinuating that there is no dispute among parties. I was insinuating there's no reasonable dispute. There's no interesting intellectual ground where disagreements don't necessarily represent one fully specious position. To get to that kind of debate, you have to get to this issue that Burke addressed in the questions afterwards, I guess. I mean, you were there. It's the question of, there are two questions about which reasonable people differ. I hope some of these people are watching today. One is the role, the interrelationship of church and state, which is a spectrum. And so among faithful Catholics today, there is a very, and I weigh on this heavily in Catholic Republic. I mean, I have a strong position on this, and I have a strong position on the second issue, I'll say in a sec. How interrelated, interdependent can the state and church be, or must the church and state be? Because there's some level of overlap, I argue, for kind of a moderate position in Catholic Republic. In the United States, for instance, what we had when the Bill of Rights was ratified 3 years after the country was ratified, the new Constitution was 1788. The Bill of Rights, first 10 amendments, was added 3 years later in 1791. The First Amendment it's the only amendment that makes explicit reference to Congress It says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. What most folks don't know is that 8 of the 13 state legislatures all had an official establishment of religion, differing Protestant sects. So in America, we always had a really nice, moderate relationship between church and state. State governments, this is federalism, right? State we tipped the scales, we tipped our hand toward state power. States can do things that the federal government couldn't do. We had a hard separation of church and state at the national level. But at the state level, which actually the term is actually federal, though now we think federal means national. At the federal level, state to state, they were allowed to. And more than half of the states had an official sect of state religions. This was true until the 14th Amendment incorporated the Bill of Rights in 1868. So the important thing is we had a really nice, moderate position, less separation of church and state than people today think. It was actually the Freemasons on the Supreme Court in the 1940s, in a 1947 case, that reversed the meaning of the First Amendment. That's why most people don't know that 8 of the 13 original colonies had an official state religion. So that's what federalism does. It gives it, that's all very specific. But what I'm saying is it's a spectrum. And some people now, it's become very trendy in traditionalist circles, a lowercase t, to say, oh yeah, I just believe in total, you know, a state, you know, a government that's pure overlap, you know, more than the Holy Roman Empire. That's become a very
very popular
trendy position. Very popular. Full on integralism, integralism, which no one really knows what that means.
Right.
It's not because it's a right wing term. No one's trying to be an Alinskyite, just the term's never been well defined. Cardinal Burke, in this first response to the first question, takes a strong position the other way. I was surprised.
That was the only part where I was like, and I'm glad you caught it too, because I think it's worth our discussion. You want to read his answer?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what I forget, did they include the questions here? I mean, it's just here's what he said.
The question is, it's kind of weird here. What the common good requires is, no.
It's not like a straight up question.
Yeah. It's basically, what does the common good require for each country to have a moral order?
Yep.
So it's a pretty generic question.
Yeah. And open ended.
Yeah.
And his response is,
and by the way, all these questions were taken from the audience there.
Oh.
They went around with baskets.
Did you submit one?
I didn't. Yeah. I didn't. But there's pieces of paper that you wrote your question on. It's a good way of doing it, because if you walk around the microphone, it's it gets horrible. And you can vet the questions ahead of time and choose the good ones. So these were all crowd questions, and they were all pretty good.
Right. Yeah, so his his response is, again, slightly surprising on the other end of the spectrum, but I don't think he meant it that way. What he said is, what the common good requires is for each country to recognize the moral order, Burke replied, specifically the natural law, which is taught in the fullest meaning in the Catholic Church, but this does not require a state religion. So fullest meaning, privileged meaning in the church, but no state religion. Then LifeSite goes on to kind of paraphrase. It says, the American Cardinal pointed out that the Catholic Church, quote, does not insist on being the state religion, even in countries where Catholics are the majority. But she does insist that the countries respect the moral law. That's an important kind of defense of why Burke would take the more secular leaning question.
Yeah,
what are yours?
In a room that was full of monarchists that I met during the week, that his response screamed American to me.
Yes.
I mean, in the room were, you know, Frenchmen and Germans and Austrians and Poles and Brazilians and English and Scottish and Irish. And I don't know, just as an American, hearing him say that in that context is like, man, we're standing American here, Your Eminence.
Right, because that's that second interesting question, the question of integralism, how much do the church and state have to overlap, always begs a second question, both of which are being called and responded to by Burke here. It's what form of regime is acceptable for instantiating the overlap of church and state. And
right.
Usually the ones that are calling themselves integralists are also calling themselves monarchists. And correct. Of course, my response is always the Thomistic one, that there are three acceptable forms of regime, and monarchy is one of them. It's a big payout, but it's also a big risk if you get a bad monarch. And so Thomas does like, and Aristotle does like, the republic, which is why I'm always willing to go to bat to defend republics. And I think Cardinal Burke would here too. But what did you think about specifically the call of the question, which produced this response, that all you need is the natural law and you don't?
Yeah, so, you know, when it comes to a Catholic republic or a monarchy, everyone would agree with the right setup, the monarchy is the best. I think of the Catholic Republic or a mixed regime as prudent in a time of confusion or where the Catholics don't have the majority or a solid majority. That seems to be the right tool out of the toolbox. That being said, that's how I would say it. And I would say that the Catholic Church doesn't need to push to be a state religion. But natural law, a lot of people don't understand this. Natural law includes embedded in it natural religion.
Yeah, that's right.
Natural law is not secular. Natural law is religion. In fact, there was a great priest from Ireland, a Dominican father there from the Angelicum, who gave a great talk on homosexuality and the priesthood and how it thwarts the ontological nature of the priesthood. And it was really well done. And he talked about this in natural law. Natural law includes priesthood. Natural law includes sacrifice. Natural law includes ceremonies. It includes altars. This is all in Thomas, Prima Secunda, on the old law, which is after question 94 on the natural law. Right. So, and Thomas spends a lot of time, you know, explaining that natural law, especially as it relates to the old law, the idea that, you know, if you go back to natural law, which is pre-Moses, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and all that, they're offering sacrifice. They're passing right. on some kind of sacerdotal power from father to son. You see that with Jacob and Joseph in the multicolored coat, which is probably not just a raincoat, but a vestment. So all that's going on there. So it seems to me that the state must have a religiosity. All states have. Aristotle and Plato aren't going to say you can have a religious-less state. You read Plato's Republic, and religion, even if it's a noble lie that you tell the people, you have to have religion to govern the people. Ancient Romans knew all this, and the medievals knew it. So I don't know. You know, the quote he says is, does not insist on being the state religion, even in countries where Catholics are the majority, but she does insist that countries respect the moral law. Yes, Your Eminence, that's correct. But when you create that vacuum, something comes in to fill it. And what we found in America is secularism and Europe. Secularism fills that vacuum. And secularism is a kind of religion. It will claim that it's not a religion, but it has rights. It has beliefs. It has a moral code. For example, right. you must call that trans man he, or you will be punished. I mean, that's, right. these are moral absolutes that are applied throughout the populace. So, and there are heresies. You know, you can be tried for heresies. You can lose your right. YouTube channel. You can lose your right. Twitter account. You can go to prison. Right. You can go to trial for hate crimes in Canada. So, this is all a reality. So I don't know. I really think that whether it's a Catholic Republic or a monarchy or whatever, the church should be striving where there is a majority for state recognition. In fact, that was part of the Lateran Treaty in, what was that, 1929, that Catholicism would be the state religion of Italy. Like the mm-hmm. church, the church fought for that. That was an important thing. And it seems that anywhere the Catholic Church has gained a majority in history, they have sought to be recognized as a state religion. Is there an exception to that? I can't think of one. We've never had a majority in America, so it's a moot point. But
I think the big issue is you can have integralism. What I would push for is moderate integralism, like what we had in the first 100 years of the country up until about the Civil War, where state to state, you know, imperium in imperio, in empire within an empire, we had two forms of government. States were like little localities where you were, there wasn't much pluralism, religious or moral.
Yeah, like in the Holy Roman Empire after the Reformation, you had Lutheran states and Catholic states, right?
Peace of Augsburg, even. Yeah,
based on the princes. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it observes subsidiarity. It's part of the genius, American genius of federalism in general, but you can't. The idea of unity, the continent-sized unity in religion, morals, cares, interests, even geographic interests, even farming interests or economic interests, is mythic. So what we're really talking about is it's important to strive to have small states that have most of the power, and this is. This is one of the main rules of a republic. It's got to be small. So this is why if you're going to have an empire within an empire, the states have to have most of the power. This gets more technical than most people at a theological conference want to go into civics.
Yeah.
But it's really important. And you can have that. You can have that kind of, I think, healthy 1791 integralism in a republic like we did. It doesn't have to just be a monarchy. That's where the conversation about a year and a half ago,
yeah,
2 years
but
ago,
what would
got
you
hijacked.
Say? Well, what would you say though? That yeah, but Tim, those were Protestant colonies.
Well, that's what I wrote a book on.
Well, I know, but it's not a Catholic republic. Like, you can't say 1791 integralism when you're talking about Puritans and Congregationalists. Like that's not
you
really
can when the ideas are all lifted from the Catholic intellectual tradition. I mean,
right.
Literally everything from. You know, natural rights, subsidy. Natural rights is exclusively in the proper sense a Catholic idea. Thomas Woods has said as much. I argue for it in my book. Subsidiarity, properly understood. We gave the term to the concept of local rule. You know, Pius XI did. Exclusively a Catholic concept when the idea is understood in its fullness. Virtue ethics. Really, the only world religion that celebrates virtue ethics anymore, even though it was Aristotelian in the first place, is Roman Catholicism as perfected by Thomas. Thomas's perfections of Aristotle. Proper church-state relations and the understanding of the person. It's Catholicism. So, and same thing with the understanding of a family economy, the understanding of how best to use science without becoming a science cult. These are, I just ran through the six chapters. These are the goodies of the Catholic natural law tradition, the Catholic intellectual tradition, that were literally being plagiarized by those Protestants. So, yeah, the polity was, they were Protestants, and they're Puritan Protestants, so they're extra potent. But they were all, you know, reading, like a kid reading a comic book inside his textbook or something, they were all reading Thomas Aquinas, you know, Bellarmine, Suarez, those guys from Salamanca, and, you know, It's a strong case because that tradition doesn't exist within Protestantism or the Enlightenment. So it's all a long way of answering the question that I figured when Burke answered this question, the air probably went out of the room. He's saying something that I think I substantiated in great detail in my book. I want to make sure that really what I think a constitution should seek to do is say not only are we going to say in God we trust – on our money and on our court buildings and whatever. But I think we should say in Jesus, you know,
right.
Specify it a little
trust.
More. In Christ we trust. Yeah. And there are more specific ways to put the stamp on the.
Right. Yeah. And I agree with you 100% on that. But so what would you say with Burke's statement here? And he said a lot more. This is obviously just a summary and kind of his key statement. So it's not really fair that this is his position, but what we have here. But she does not insist that on being the state religion, even in countries where Catholics are the majority. I think that's an objective fact. The Catholic Church does not insist on it. But would we agree that she should encourage it or ask for it and say, like Poland, let us make Our Lady the Queen of Poland. Let us put In Christ We Trust on the money let us, you know, I don't know, have 10 commandments at the courthouse. I mean, don't you think we as Catholics, as private citizens, should be moving locally and then beyond local to a higher level to institute the social kingship of Christ, the King?
Within the given answers on that spectrum of reasonable, where's the camera? Within that spectrum of reasonable Catholics, conservative, faithful Catholics, what no one out there is doing, I said this to and about Patrick Deneen at Notre Dame, who's kind of popularized the topic, is defining what a state religion is. Because it's, and there's a full spectrum. That's why I said the whole prefatory 3 minutes I said before I started answering the question. A state religion could literally be, here's what it was in the colonies, right? Where if you're in one of the southern colonies, you were Anglican, new Anglican. If you're in one of the northern colonies, you were Presbyterian or Calvinist. And basically it wasn't Sharia law. They weren't the common law didn't really function any differently. There were just some maybe tax benefits, and more Calvinist type things were printed on the buildings in the north, and more Anglican type things were printed on the courtroom in the south. That could be a state religion. That's very non-onerous, right? I mean, that's more titular. Those are just titular distinctions. Or it could mean everything to, like, every time the Congress gets together, it has like the codex, it has like the canon law, and they're like, we're just trying to instantiate in this,
right,
you know, into our positive law.
It could go
law.
So far as to say part of our upper house, the Lords, has bishops on it, which is historically what happened.
Right.
Part of the Senate has clerics in it, which is...
That's the other extreme.
Yeah.
So, and between these two extreme positions, where it's pretty much just titular, you say, "Hey, we're a Catholic." We're, you know, Maryland, contrary to popular belief, was never a Catholic state. There never was a Catholic establishment in any of the 13 colonies. But let's say it was Maryland, the way people think, we're a Catholic state. We're gonna use more Catholic terms. You know, like on the buildings, we say, "Pray the Our Father." We'll call it the Our Father, not the Lord's Prayer. Stuff like that. It's more titular. It could mean that, or it could mean anything all the way to, like, we're enforcing the canon law and the honorary legislators are the bishops in Maryland. Yes.
And when the executor of the law comes into power, he is anointed by the Metropolitan Archbishop.
Right.
Which was, again, traditional both in the East and the West. You know, that's usually what happened, is that a Metropolitan anointed.
Right. And within a certain jurisdiction, maybe that metropolitan has a legislative veto power or a line item veto power. I mean, you could take it as far as you want. That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. And what smart people are supposed to do, that smart people are not doing in this debate, outside of, honestly, my book, I try very hard to define terms and define limits, is a state religion means all of these things. That's without even anyone seeking to...
I mean, technically, Anglicanism is still a state religion. But it's not one that any integralist would want to adopt. Obviously, Catholic integralist would look at Anglicanism and be like, well, yeah, a church and a state are integrated, but who wants that?
Right. But even if you took 10 hypothetical Catholic integrated nations, just call them the 10 new nations, they could all be integrated. What did you say? Church state overlaps. Established churches of country A, B, C, D, E, F, all the way to 10 countries. And they could be differing degrees and still say they all have a state religion of Catholicism. And they could, at the legislative level, which is really how a country functions, at the constitutional legislative level, they could operate totally differently, where Catholicism has a very, very meager role in the legislative process, the way that laws are made, executed and adjudicated, you know, or interpreted. Yeah. Or it could be a completely onerous level. And I'm always saying, like, yes, there should be at the very least a titular role. But other than that, I really, as a huge, huge fan of our early constitution, I'm always saying things work really beautifully when they operate constitutionally the way our country, our constitution did for the first 40 years or so. And so I'm saying what we did worked. The First Amendment was beautiful. Some establishment, now that was established Protestantism, but let it be at the local state level where if we wanted, we all the Catholics, we could all get together in one state. I don't know which one is going to be. And Texas. have an established state religion. Yeah, you'd want to start someplace where there are a lot of Catholics, presumably. But wherever it is, call it Texas. Everyone get together. And yeah, and under the First Amendment, which people assume means it's opposite now because yeah. They've been brainwashed by the Supreme Court, you could get together and it could basically operate if we made some other changes to bring the Constitution back to the original form. Many of its other clauses have been reversed, just like the First Amendment. And it would work really beautifully. And I think that would still work well within the confines of what Cardinal Burke's saying. But all I'm saying is on this issue, which is very trendy to talk about, we have to push people. What do you mean by this? To what degree should the church and state be integrated? It's very, very important. And yeah. It will grow more. I don't want to sound crazy, but it will grow more and more important if you end up getting actual real world secession movements, right? If the, which is something that lots of different states now are talking about, breaking right. off and reforming their own constitutions, could happen in our lives, and it will be more important then than even now.
Yeah. But all of it is a far off. Wouldn't you agree? A Catholic monarchy? Like, guys, look around. It's low down on the list. Could it happen? Yes, I hope it will happen. I think it probably will happen in the future. But, you know, I think the next question that Burke has is much more appropriate, where he says, is there a Catholic duty to resist the, what is it? No, I thought it was about Islam. Yeah, to resist the European Union and instead build a union of Christian patriots and sovereign nations. So that's pretty good, too, because this is, again, going against what Pope Francis stated. Specifically with supranational governments, which we talked about 2 weeks ago, right?
With legislative force, he said. That's yes. his term. Yeah.
Yes. He says, Cardinal Burke, Catholics do have the duty within the European Parliament to bring the Union back to the original vision and certainly to oppose anything that would be contrary to the moral law. So... that's good. Again, yeah. it's again a knock against European EU totalitarianism.
Right. Or even by implication, he's the American cardinal. You kind of asked this question at the end of his previous statement, and it's sort of the bridge to his next statement. You could apply it to American federalism, which is all but dead, right? Because the American federalism was originally supposed to operate kind of like the original EU, where the states all were the forum of experimentation. They had most of the power, the state governments. It wasn't the national power of the federal Congress. They could all do pretty much whatever they wanted. They would just get together in wartime, and there was this commerce power that the central government had. Now, it's all been reversed. All the real powers in the center, you know, the federal government, and it's been conglomerated, sort of the way the EU seems to be pushing towards a conglomeration. And Cardinal Burke, when I read it in that context, I think, is there a duty to resist this centralization, this globalization when you do it at the intercontinental level? And he seems to be saying yes, meaning you might have to fight back, right? So I don't think fighting back is so nearly far off. No, so far around the corner as others. And again, this is a wide open area about which uber speculative. Everyone will disagree. I mean, there aren't any two people on planet Earth that will have the exact same answer. But I mean, look at even what's happening in the context of Cardinal Burke's words in Alabama, Missouri, and Georgia. What they are really provoking here is you know, maybe civil war too. Because if you understand what they're doing,
if they're waiting people for overseas, it's making abortion illegal in states.
Right. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah. So, illegalizing abortion in the face of Roe versus Wade. Europeans who don't know what that really did. Roe versus Wade did not make, contrary to popular opinion, it did not make abortion legal in the United States. What Roe versus Wade did is it made it illegal for one of the 50 states to make abortion illegal. It made it illegal to make it illegal. And so basically these three states, some say Louisiana tomorrow will join them. It's a, like a league of southern states provoking maybe civil war too. Basically violating, they're saying, oh, Roe versus Wade, this judge made law in 1973, said it's illegal for us, our state legislature, to make this illegal. Well, guess what? We're doing it.
Yep.
And now we're going to see what the federal government's response will be. Will they cut off monies in the form of a funded mandate? Will they send in the troops like the college integration in the 50s and 60s? What will they do? Considering that it's President Trump who's mostly supportive of these southern states. And that's what Cardinal Burke's really speaking to. This is not abstract. This is a real thing. Is there a duty to resist not only the horrible substantive issue itself, like abortion or euthanasia, but the globalization, the centralization of power, which always goes along with the substantive issue? There's always the procedural component of centralization, which goes along with the immoral laws.
Yeah.
So he's hitting on important stuff.
Yeah, it's fascinating, too, because it seems at first glance that this debate has to do with Muslims in Europe. Right?
Right.
But when you're hearing it from Burke, who's an American, it's, you know, people watching, it's been interesting here on the channel, TNT, about 60% plus are American, but pushing 40% are not American. So we always have to remember that, Tim. When we're talking about Alabama, Georgia, they don't know what we're talking about. Maybe they do, but we have to kind of fill them in on American politics. But it's also affecting this abortion debate. It's encouraging to see it, right? We're not just talking about borders and subsidiarity and nation rights and all that with regard to, you know, we don't want immigrants who disrespect our culture, language, religion. But it's also about morality and whether you can kill an unborn baby in our state, in our township. And so I'm fascinated to see this unfolding in the United States of America. And I think it's important, too, that God in this moment chose an American cardinal to be at the Rome March for Life, not the American March for Life. But he's speaking in this time when abortion and legality is all happening in the context of states' rights. In our world, in our Catholic world. The shame of it, though, Tim, is that it's the Protestant brothers and sisters who are leading this fight. Yes, some Catholic bishops have spoken up, but it's pathetic.
It's true.
We don't see our Catholic metropolitan archbishops in these regions just, you know, offering masses and Te Deums in celebration.
Did you see the bishops of Alabama all said that the law went too far?
Yeah.
Disgusting. Disgusting.
I almost got in my car and drove down there.
We should do a little TNT shakedown. Yeah. I was enraged.
Unbelievable. These shameful bishops.
How can it go too far?
Shame on you.
I mean, it's one thing at the national discourse to kind of be like, well, I don't, you know, I'm very certain that it didn't go too far, but I'm not talking to only Catholics when I address national politics on some political blog. But when I'm talking to Alabama bishops of the Catholic Church, or you are, we already have a more rarefied playbook. And the playbook is, no, you think it went too far because there are no exemptions for rape or incest? This is not debatable for Catholics.
No, bishops. What kind of bishop school did you go to, bishops? Wrong kind of school. That's bad.
They went to one of the seminaries, which taught them.
It's crazy. It is crazy. I mean, thank God we got Bishop Burke in Rome.
I know.
I mean, we need some guys like him back here in the U.S., but the way they're cranking out some of these bishops and these appointments, it's a sad, sad day for America.
I know.
Every time I hear of an episcopate opening up, I go, oh boy, who's going to be next?
Yeah.
What kind of mitered clown are we going to see now?
Yeah, I know. I know. I don't know how Burke got in there. It seems to be the exception to the rule.
Benedict. I mean, if Benedict had left Cardinal Burke, his eminence in America, he would have been fed to the wolves.
Why do you say?
Well, because the power players right now are Archbishop Gregory, Supich. Yeah, I mean, Dolan, all these guys. They're the guys, they would have none of Cardinal Burke's positions. In fact, it's pretty providential that Cardinal Burke is in Rome and he's kind of free agent. Get to show up at these cool events and say cool things.
How free agent is he? I mean, I've never quite understood that. Can he really kind of roam? I don't understand.
If you're a cardinal, you basically have, I think, carte blanche, canonical, free kitchen pass.
Jurisdiction?
Yeah, pass.
Really?
Yeah, so I believe he can enter. I'm not sure on this, so canonists, correct me. I believe he can go to any diocese he wants. He doesn't need permission. He would only do it with courtesy by talking to the bishop.
Really?
But I believe a cardinal can... Yeah, I mean, he was not going to come in and just start confirming people, rando.
But, right.
You know, he doesn't, I don't think, need the permission of Bishop so-and-so in Omaha, Nebraska to come and do something in Omaha, Nebraska. He's a cardinal of the church. He answers only to the Pope.
Right.
Juridically.
That goes for any cardinal.
Juridically, he's above the National Conference of Bishops or whatever. Yeah, cardinal.
Right.
Yeah.
So theoretically, if we had a little TNT conference and we wanted to get people together on this issue of globalism, whatever. I mean, this is pure theoretical. This is not fake theoretical. We're really doing it. But and we wanted to invite him. He doesn't have to ask anyone's permission. He can show up and be a.
Well, I mean, the Pope is his superior. So if the Pope said no, I think he would obey the Pope and not do it as a cardinal.
Yeah. But is he asking, cardinals ask permission or forgiveness? Does he just go unless the Pope says don't go? Or does he
have to ask? I think it's understood that you go where you want to go. Yeah, you don't call up the Pope, hey, I want to go get a bagel this morning. Can I get a bagel? You know, I think it's understood, especially if he's going to go back to his home country, you just go back, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, cardinals have a lot of freedom and a lot of power.
Yeah.
And the USCCB can't bar him. Right?
Right.
Cardinal Dolan can't say, hey, don't come here anymore. You know?
Right.
It's like, well, I'm equal to you. You're a cardinal, I'm a cardinal.
Right. But what about the rumors of travel restrictions on Burt? Are those confirmed?
I don't think so. He comes to America. He was in America a week and a half ago, I think, 2 weeks ago.
Was he?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Well, next time he's here, I'd love to Cardinal Burke.
Reach out.
Dubia
Brothers.
Bring all the Dubia Brothers. Yeah, you met Brandmuller.
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 I've never met Brandmuller before, and, you know, he just, like I said, he's got nobility and he's got sweetness, and I was very impressed by him. I love that he just decided to just get on the mic and do an hour on contraception and then drop the mic. I love that. Super awesome. Cool. Cardinal Burke. I mean, maybe we should wrap up with this large-scale Muslim immigration question. The final question answered by the American Cardinal concerned the morality of resisting large-scale Muslim immigration. Burke responded that given the opportunism of many economic migrants, the hopes of world domination inherent in Islam, and the dangers of extra-legal Muslim enclaves in host countries, resisting large-scale Muslim immigration is a responsible exercise of one's patriotism, end quote. So, that's a big one. I think
that is a big one.
Maybe I'm just making this up in my mind, but that's kind of, I think, where people said, and like looked around each other like, Cardinal Burke just said that.
Yeah.
You know, that's a bit, I mean, what's a bigger thing to say? Drop the mic on that or drop the mic on contraception? Or drop the mic on transgenderism. You had three cardinals.
Right.
Coming after.
Right. That's.
I mean, this was a good conference, people. Y'all should have been there.
Yeah. Wish I was.
Man, at the Angelicum in Rome. Super cool. We had Latin Mass.
Yeah.
We had rosaries. We had adoration. Confessions. I'm going back to that. It was fun.
Well, in terms of what's more controversial, it's interesting that the Francis pontificate is countercultural with regard to the transgender issue, right? He's not with the mainstream popular culture at all. He's said a few different times, you know, there are two sexes or what, I forget exactly what he said, but on the Muslim immigration and quote unquote nationalism issue, he's right on board. He admits he's a globalist. Yeah. So I guess if in response to the call of your question, what's the most controversial? Well, Burke is going against his boss the most by saying what he said about Muslims. Yeah.
I think on the moral plane, contraception is the most controversial, but
yeah,
within intramural Catholic discourse,
right,
Burke was by far the most controversial in bringing this up. And he said stuff like this before, so it's not out of left field.
No.
But, you know, that he talked about the virtue of patriotism, the importance of borders, love for the homeland, and resisting large-scale Muslim immigration.
Of course. It's great.
It's great. It's great. So this gives me a lot of hope, Tim. Yeah. I just had, you know, people have said, how come you can have videos that criticize Pope Francis and then you can smile and shake his hand? Like, that's so hypocritical. I don't think it is. He's the Pope. No. He's the vicar of Christ. I salute him.
Right.
I wish him well.
Right.
Right. But, you know, I also gave him a book that's critical of many things he's said and done.
It's honorable. Yeah, you handed it to him to his face.
I gave a long research documented thesis of 150 years climaxing in his pontificate. I mean, people are dogging me, but I'm like, did you write a book on it? Did you do the research? Did you fly to Rome? Did you give it to the Pope? I mean,
yeah.
What else do you want me to do? You want me to slap him in the face? Do you want me to, I mean.
Right, which is automatic excommunication, by
exactly,
the way.
Exactly, I don't want that. But,
well, I mean, but that's not what you're admonishing to do anyway. I can't think of a less hypocritical thing to do that when you were asking me before you went out, like, oh, what would you do? Would you meet with him? I'm like, I guess if I had the chance, but it would be mildly intimidating. I didn't know you were going to hand him the book yourself. That's a very honorable thing to do. Hypocrisy means that you write that and then you either go and you meet with him in such a way that it's facially contradictory to the positions you're taking, which meeting with someone's never that. I guess unless you're saying down with tyrant King George III and then you go have tea with him, that would be. But that's not what you're saying. But then it would also be mildly hypocritical if you had, I guess, brought the book, but you brought the book and you presented it to him.
Signed
you're presenting
it
for him. Yourself. Yeah, you're in his state. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you're in the Vatican City. Diplomatically speaking, I think this is a ballsy thing to do. And yeah. I didn't understand what your detractors were saying here. I still don't. I'd like to hear.
I don't either.
I'd be interested.
I think they wanted me to like yell at him or something. I don't know. Honestly, I think
maybe so.
Handing someone a treatise is much more impactful than yelling at him.
Sure.
If I said, answer the dubia, Holy Father, made a big scene. I don't know.
He's heard that before.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I think it was a good move. I feel happy about it. And I was delighted to see Cardinal Burke again and to meet Cardinal Ike and just pleased with Brandmuir. And it's also cool just to like meet people who watch the show, watch the channel in Rome, Italian people. You know, and people from all Polish people. And I'm going to play a tape. There was a great guy I met. He was a sacristan at Trinita, the fraternity parish, Luke. And his brother watches the show. So we recorded a little video for his brother saying, you got to go to the Latin Mass. And he sent me an audio of him teaching his child the Pater Noster in Latin.
Pater Noster.
Pater Noster.
Qui es? Sanctificetur.
Fac.
Nomen.
Tum.
Adveniat.
Adveniat.
Regnum.
Tum.
Fiat.
Fiat.
Voluntas.
Tua.
Sicut.
Sicut.
It's cool.
It's just cool, man. It's just great to know that, you know, we might be divided by oceans and language and all this, but we're united in the faith and we're all passionate about these things. Another cool thing, Tim, is, you know, I don't know Italian. I can read it a little bit, but when people are speaking it, I'm gone. So I finally got into the fraternity parish, and it was a solemn high mass, and it was going, and I just sort of relaxed, like, finally English, you know? But then I realized that English is Latin. But I know the Latin of the mass. I've heard it thousands of times. And so it was kind of cool to be in that environment and then to realize that Latin is a linguistic anchor for my soul. Like, I was able to ease back into, like, I felt like I was in English. And then it hit me, I wasn't hearing English. I was hearing the prayers of the mass in Latin. And it's cool to be in those masses because there's all around you, French, English, Germans, Austrians, Italians, but we're all worshiping in the same tongue.
Well, that's the whole point. That's what's awesome about it. We don't need – it's better than the vernacular languages.
Exactly. Is that
all around the world is a whole other issue. But even when you talk about having, like, you find out – I think I was 25 before I learned that even in old rites – we're not talking Vatican II foolishness. We're talking – there are, like, 19 rites if you count them all. It's like – there's sort of an argument to be made. People are going to go nuts, but sort of an argument to be made for why don't we just have one? You know, like, all around the world. I know the ancient traditions, blah blah blah. That don't flood my inbox, people. But
they're coming,
beautiful.
Tim. They're
going
to get you.
They're coming.
Yeah,
they are. But Latin, it's better to have one language for all of us around the world. It's good globalism, not one form of government, but one form of liturgy with one beautiful language.
I can kneel next to a fill in the blank Chinaman or a Hungarian fill in the blank, and we're saying the same prayers together.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
It's awesome.
So it's like Latin mass to the next level, especially when it's solemn high mass and we're all chanting it together. A room full at this conference, a church full of people, all different languages and cultures, and we're chanting the mass together.
It's beautiful.
Walk out on the street, some of us can't even talk to each other, but we just worship the Holy Trinity in the same tongue. It's amazing.
That's non-stupid globalism. That's non-mushy globalism. It's non-sentimental. That's beautiful. There's no other way around it. Yeah.
It's awesome. Yeah. I met a young man. He was an Aggie, Texas A&M, and he was with his family. And it was at Trinitas Fraternity. And he said, "Hey, Dr. Marshall," he's like, "I watch you. And I told my family, we got to go to a Latin mass." So we're in Rome on vacation. And we went to our first Latin mass. And there you were at the Latin mass. So we took a picture together. It was cool, man. It's cool. So, and what's sad is if I went to any other church in Rome, I wouldn't understand what's going on.
Right.
I mean, I would. But I go into the Latin mass. It's just like at home.
Yeah.
Just like mom used to make, you know,
it had to be wild for that dude. Yeah. His first ever. He's like, "I'm going because I saw this guy from Texland doing these videos three times a week." And
YouTubes.
He says to go on the YouTubes and he says, "Go, it's pretty good." He presented a compelling case that I go in Italy and you're
in
just
Rome.
There.
Yeah.
And you're in Rome, Italy, and you're just there. That had to be
pretty cool.
A hell of a story.
Pretty cool.
It's neat.
So, and also just hello to everybody. Lots of Italians watch the show, Tim. It's kind of cool. People will just come up and say, "Hey, watch the show, love the channel, TNT, TNT. Some of them would say, "Hey, say hi to Tim," you know?
That's funny.
Or someone says, "Tim here." I said, "No, he didn't make it," you know? So,
teacher. Yeah,
he's finishing up the semester, so. Yeah, that was kind of cool. It was just a great week, good time with my son, memorable experiences. And, you know, we talk about hard things here, Tim, but there's a lot of good. This was a good thing. This was a good thing. And to see so many people who came from all over the world to come to this conference and the March for Life in Rome. Also, on the March for Life, Tim, I saw no antagonism. You know, I've seen at the D.C. March for Life, there's counter protesters and people spitting and being rude and flipping people off and all that. Everyone here, like the Italian people, they were like coming out and taking pictures and waving and smiling. I think the Italians are so super religious that they're apathetic about their religion. Do you think that's right?
Yeah, I hope that's right.
To be pro-life, like the random people on the side of the street seem to be pro-life. you know, and like smiling and happy. Even though I
no counter protesters is a good stat. Yeah, I'm surprised. Did you go by Piazza Venezia, the big wedding cake building?
That's where it ended.
That's where it ended. That's what I thought. That's dope. That's awesome.
And it was interesting too, because there's like a group of priests pushing a float with Our Lady on top of it. Like, we don't really have floats in the American context. You
right.
know, it's kind of like this, something you would see like in Godfather 2 or something like that. You know,
yeah,
pushing
yeah,
a, yeah. Yeah. So that was neat. And then the nuns were and beating the drum and the nuns singing. And a lot of clergy were there. I saw one bishop that looked like an Italian bishop that was there. But just the two cardinals, Cardinal Ike and Cardinal Brooke. And I bet Cardinal Brandmuller would have been there. But he's, you know, he has a hard time getting around. You know, he couldn't even get to the ambo. And at the Q&A, he stayed in his seat, I believe. So he's just, you know, he's a little bit, he's just elderly and having a hard time, but he's fiery and he's got his wits to him.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
so
interesting, man.
Yeah.
I wish I'd been there.
I know. I wish you'd been there. And, the food was good. Lots of cool people were there. I mean, people that are all in our circles, like Ed Penton.
Yeah, I saw Pent was there.
He was covering everything. He's a great guy. I'd never met him in person.
Did you talk to him?
Yo, yeah.
Did you talk to him?
Oh, yeah.
Did he know about the TNT or what?
Didn't
bring it up? Yeah.
Yeah. And
yeah, he's a cool guy. I admire him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I gave him a copy of the book. And Michael Hitchborn from Lepanto Institute was there.
Good dude.
Yeah. Reed Dale was there.
Yeah.
Professor Roberto De Mattei.
Love that dude.
Okay, so we haven't talked about this, but he gave a talk on the mystery of iniquity.
Ooh.
And the role of Satan in society over history from the very beginning until the very present moment.
Ooh.
It was so fantastic, talking about Antichrist and demons and the body, the kingdom of Satan, and this mystery of iniquity working itself out. It was deep, man. It was really good.
That guy's such a smarty. He's great at connecting dots. I love Mattei. He's a great dot connector through
history. I think, having listened to him, and I read one of his books while I was in Rome on Plinio about the reign of Mary. So Professor De Mattei and Plinio and others believe that there'll be a reign of Mary. There'll be a minor tribulation. Then there'll be a reign of Mary, which will be like where the state and the cultures are integrated to the Catholic Church, something like the 13th century, but global. And then there'll be the time of the Antichrist and the tribulation, the end time. So I read Mattei's book on that while I was in Rome. Someone gave it to me and I loved it. So reading that book and listening to his talk. And then I also spoke with Roberto De Mattei. He read Infiltration. He liked it, but it was good. So that was good to get that feedback from him. He also has a new book coming out too, which we might want to look at. Yeah.
Yeah.
My impression is he is one of the great intellectuals of our time.
Yeah.
I want to get to know him more, and I want to spread knowledge of him and introduce more people to him, because he sees with eyes that most people don't see with.
Agreed. He one of my favorite short articles I've ever read. Maybe it was a talk. He incorporates it into talks and articles that I'm sort of going to be starting to write another book on at the end of the summer, is the connection between the years 1517, 1717, and 1917.
He did that
thematic
in this talk.
Connections.
He did that
did
in
he?
This talk.
It's all about it.
Yeah.
And
Freemasonry.
Boy, yeah.
He talked a lot about the secret societies. And
did
and
he?
He's good, too, because he doesn't just see it as Freemasonry, but he sees it as a Gnostic Manichaean recurrence, like a
right.
satanic echo that tries to invade the church.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, he's good. We need to promote Roberto De Mattei stuff.
Yeah.
He's good.
Yeah. I've long admired it. A great dot connector. You need those 50,000 foot above the surface guys.
Yes.
The big minds for that.
I know people like get all worked up and love E. Michael Jones and all that. But Roberto De Mattei, folks, check him out. Get some of his books, man.
If you want an Italian, a European intellectual,
yes.
Don't go E. Michael Jones. Go Roberto De Matei. Yeah. No, I'm serious. I've been looking into him more. Michael Jones is down, you know, talking down Mother Angelica, insinuating filthy things about her sexuality. Just lots of bad.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, insinuating that she's a lesbian even. What? I just read this last night. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Insinuating. Saying bad things about our friend Michael Voris, unfounded things. I just, if you want a Euro intellectual, Matei is the guy. I love that guy.
I would take the Euro off. If you want a Catholic intellectual who's thinking deeply on many topics, he's got a V8 in his mind, 8 cylinders. I like this Professor Roberto De Matei.
Me too.
Connecting very distinguished.
Dots. Yeah.
Yes. And a good speaker too. So yeah, John Henry Weston was there running the show. He was running around organizing things. He gave a great talk too. John Henry did. You know, an unsung hero that we need to praise more is Diane Montagna.
She's great. I mean, I don't know her. Yeah.
I met her several times. Had dinner with her with a fraternity priest and the sacristan. She's super smart and super insightful. And she's been doing some of this yeoman's work of just researching things and breaking stories.
Right.
Yeah. Right. I mean, she's part of the LifeSite team.
Yeah, if it's a LifeSite article, she's one of my very favorite reporter writers there.
The stuff coming out.
I'll look at the end. I'm like, oh, it's Montagna. She always writes the hard hitting stuff I like, making connections also.
Exactly. So, it's, you know, a lot of these people that I've known and admired from afar, it was cool just to be at a tavern drinking wine and eating some veal, you know, and talking shop, you know?
Yeah.
Especially in Rome. And getting inside info and hearing perspectives on stuff.
Would he just go with you?
Oh, he was my he was my sidekick. People love Beckett. Beckett is dropping science in the conversation. He's like, okay, well, what if we get five? This is Beckett. What if we get 5 super cardinals? They have a veto power over the Pope. And then we're like, yeah, okay, what about this? What about that? He's like working through it. You know, he's doing a little TNT on his own.
That's you know, good.
10-year-old TNT.
How old is he?
10.
Yeah. Oh, he's only 10. Oh, he looks
so
old.
Oh, yeah, man. We would wake up. We'd get our breakfast on. We would go to visit churches, light the candles, go to mass, go to the conferences. I mean, we were doing like 11-mile days.
Sounds like a good time.
Going after it. Man. Yeah, so just he and I, my little buddy, he didn't complain one time.
All right, here we are, St. Peter's Square. You having a good time?
Mm-hmm.
I am too. We just had a gelato. Good lunch. All right, let's go to St. Peter's.
He had a good time. He didn't want to. He's like, do we have to go home? He's like, maybe we can stay longer. Like, no, we got to go home. Next year I'm coming back with you.
It's cool.
I said, we'll see how your other siblings feel about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the cycle's, it's 8 kids, so that's like every 7 years, bud.
Yeah.
You got to wait it out.
Maybe you can do two at once, make that's it a 4-year cycle.
That's true.
Yeah. Looked fun.
Yeah. So, yeah, maybe we need to work out the date or something, get you out there.
Yeah. Well, I think in future years it'll be more feasible. But
yeah. Yeah, I mean, just amazing, cool priests, monsignors who work at the CDF. You know, you're sitting around just having a drink with them, talking to them. Let's go out to CDF. You know?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Dope.
Very cool. So, well, there it is. That's the Rome trip. And a good conference. I encourage other people next year, check it out. Voice of the Family Conference. LifeSite always promotes it. They have the sign-up sheet every year. And it's encouraging. It's encouraging. Everybody, Tim, by the way, everybody at this conference was Latin master.
Yeah.
All the masses, Latin.
That
I can't remember if the rosary, I think the rosary was in Latin too. Because there's all different languages. How are you going to fix the problem? Oh, right. We'll do 1 decade in French and 1 decade in German. No, let's just do the whole thing in Latin. Boom, solved.
Well, it's a performed proof of why it's one of the many reasons it's so good. You're bringing together a bunch of nationalities, everything we talked about 15 minutes ago. What are you going to do? You're going to pick one, you know, redneck, the descended Latin form, French, you know, Spanish, exactly. Italian, and privilege that? No, you just do it in Latin. That's the whole point of the thing.
That's right.
So, hey, unrelated, quick shout out to Love Your Motherboards. I've recently came on these skateboards. Beautiful art. I think we're gonna work something out.
These are the ones that have like icons on them.
Beautiful icons.
Is this how you broke your arm? Yeah, you've got this thing on your wrist.
Well, yeah. So I've been. I think they're gonna sponsor me. Back in the day, I was a
they're gonna sponsor you.
Skateboarder. Yeah, yeah. They're gonna do a
Catholic brought to you Republic by motherboards. Dang.
Yeah. Love your motherboards. So I've been, no, this isn't a break. This is just a little retweaking of an old injury I get from when I skate a lot. But
yeah, we wouldn't want you to be kind of limp wristed. You got to keep that thing healed up.
Gotta keep it
straight wristed.
Yeah, firm handshake.
A
diamond in an ice storm.
Yes.
Yeah. So anyway, it's just a good comment. I've had some talks with them over the last week.
But did you fall down and tweak it? What happened there?
This is just catching, you know, putting your hand on the ground, right, which you do a lot when you're street skating, and it literally nothing got shattered, just overstretched. Used to happen back when I was a young man.
Yeah,
as an older man, it gets a lot, stuff's a lot more sensitive, you know?
Break down.
They do. Things fall apart.
Yeah, things fall off your car.
Novel goes.
Yeah. You have to duct tape things back on.
Yeah.
Rearview mirror fell off the windshield. You got to put it back on somehow.
Tape it on.
Okay, I saw these mother. Are these the ones that Father Mark Goring uses, the skateboards?
Well, I just recently told him about them. Yeah, I told him, I was like, you need to talk to these people. Yeah, beautiful. There's an Our Lady of Guadalupe. Okay,
so but you can't grind on them, bro. Because you're gonna grind Our Lady.
Yeah, I mean you're not like trying to make. You know, the LBs would say you can't grind.
I don't know, man. I think you need to put some like Scotch Guard or some sort of protective lacquer to protect Our Lady.
Well, so you can't. Well, grinding, you're actually on the trucks. You're not on the deck. That would be a board slide or something.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway. But yeah, that's sure to upset the LBs. But they do beautiful. I mean, all skateboard
everybody,
decks get
all the
worn
LBs
down.
Write a comment against Tim on this.
Yeah, you get tail bite, you get wheel bite.
Yeah,
but the point is, it's promoting. I mean, that's kind of like saying you can't wear a Mary shirt because you, especially a sweaty guy like me, you sweat into it.
Right,
you're sweating on
Mary. Or you might put it in the laundry with its underwear, and it might touch the Mary shirt.
Right, to the underwear. It's like, I mean, this is where formal and final causation is really important. This is where intent matters. It's not obsessive.
Are you gonna get some of these on your skateboard?
Yeah, Goring has that one on his skateboard.
No, he doesn't. I photoshopped it.
Oh, you did?
That one shot with Goring with the board where it has this on it?
Yeah.
I photoshopped that.
Oh, you okay. I was bragging to all my friends that Goring put that on there.
I shouldn't have told you, dude. I photoshopped it as a joke.
And it's supposed to work on everyone else but me.
Cardinal, I'm going to send some of these to Cardinal Burke. Cardinal Burke has the mug, the Doobie Brothers mug. Signed, right? He signed one.
You signed one? Yeah.
No, I didn't. He signed it. I'm not a Doobie Brother. I'm just a dude who has the mug.
Oh, you signed, or he signed it and gave it to you.
No, someone else. I wasn't smart enough to bring a mug for him. So,
I see. I wonder who bought it for him.
Well, I know the guy.
Do you think? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well. Yeah. Well, we can get him. We can get him more TNT gear.
Yeah, we need to get him some merch, some swag.
You're homies with him. Get him on the show.
Dubia.
Make it happen.
Yeah, we'll get him. We need to get him a. What do you call this? The red hat. The Galero.
Yeah. Bolero. Is it Galero?
I don't see. Now we sound ignorant.
Red hat.
Yeah, because on this one it says, because, you know, Doobie Brothers, it says Amoris ain't all right on the brim.
With me? Yeah.
Non-Catholics think that's a flying saucer.
Yeah.
Right. Come on.
Right.
Learn some Euro history, folks.
Seriously.
So, all right. Well, hey, one of the things that was stated at this conference, who was it? Who emphasized it? One of the cardinals. I think it was Brandmuller. I think it was, but I might have it wrong. Emphasized, pray the rosary to destroy these problems in the church. I wouldn't be surprised if they all said that, but it was one in particular, one of the cardinals that really emphasized it. And I want to say it was Brandmuller. But yeah, like we always say, We're back on TNT here. We say it again. Pray that rosary. You know, before I met the Pope that day, I didn't know if I was going to for sure meet the Pope. I thought it was a good chance. I couldn't sleep. And so I just woke up and was just praying the rosary for the Pope. You know, just for him. Yeah. For clarity, for truth, for conversion, for leadership, gifts of the Holy Spirit. So we got to pray the rosary.
I like how you snuck in conversion.
Hey, I need conversion.
No, I need conversion. It's ongoing.
But yeah, I snuck it in.
I like that. I like how you snuck it in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Anti-modernist oath. Yeah. So everybody pray that rosary. Check out the Latin Mass. You never know. You might go to Latin Mass. You might see Tim or me at that Latin Mass, rando in the world. Who knows? So check out the Latin Mass. You got to start knowing the Latin Mass. So when you come to Rome and you're with all these foreigners, you come to Mass together. We're all praying the same language to the Most Holy Trinity. It's amazing. Or if we need to, we can pray the rosary in Latin together. Teach your kids Latin. Got it. If we're going to have a Catholic culture, our kids need to know Latin. Teach your kids Latin. So that was cool, too, because Beckett takes a lot of Latin. And he's in Rome, and he's reading stuff all around Rome in Latin. Or asking me a question like, well, what's that? Oh, that's ablative? Oh, okay.
Agrippa.
Pretty cool.
Agrippa's everything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. At the Pantheon, right?
Pantheon, yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of
Agrippa, something Facit, you know, Agrippa made this. And so he read that. I remember standing there with him and reading that on the Pantheon with him. So teach your kids Latin. Exactly. I was very proud of my son. So,
all right. I was doing a Latin lesson yesterday, going through first declination with Miss Maggie. We're going through we're declining agricola.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's just
that's a tricky one because it's got the A ending, but it's a male noun.
That's right. Good man.
Yep. Tricky. Farmer. By the way, Tim, I used to, on all the previous podcasts when I was just solo rolling, I would always do a Latin word. Where is she? Uh-huh. Oh, there it is. Yeah.
There it is. There. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. I would always end with Latin word of the show. People loved it, and they've been writing me, you got to bring back Latin words. So we should probably do that.
Yeah, do it. Let's do it.
So maybe every other, I'll bring a word, you bring a word. So I guess if we're talking Agricola, farmer.
Sure.
You know, that's a good
farmer.
One.
Farmer is the word of the day.
Farmer.
Yeah.
So what we want you to do is cultivate the seeds of truth in your child's mind in Latin.
I was the farmer when I was teaching. I was cultivating seeds of truth in my child's mind in Latin.
That's right. So, yeah. So we'll start doing Latin word of the day because we need to promote Latin more, especially being in Rome. I realize we got to be real about Latin. So, also, tomorrow, the Infiltration hardbacks ship from Sofia. So if you pre-ordered from Sofia, you'll probably get it in 3-4 days, maybe. I don't know how it's going to work over the weekend. Also, the Kindle ebook version goes live May 23rd. I don't know if this video may come out on May 23rd. We're recording on May 22 or May 24th. Also, the launch team, if you're on the launch team, you got notified today. So check your email box. And so, yeah, Infiltration's out. It's doing really well. I think it has 4 number one spots all week on Amazon. It's holding bestseller category. So
it's awesome.
Yeah, it was almost number one in Catholicism, the big category, but it was getting beat out by Jesus Calling. That's not even a Catholic book.
Who's that? I don't even know who that is.
It's a Protestant devotional book.
Oh,
yeah.
Catholicism.
I was like, man, let's get that out of there. We got to bump that out.
Yeah.
So, so this is the launch week. So this week and next week, we'll be launching it. And hopefully it does well. So get a copy, Infiltration, at Sofia or Amazon.
SofiaInstitute.com. Is that it? Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Or just Google Sofia Institute. Or Amazon if you want the ebook. And there is a Audible version. But it's a little bit delayed, maybe by 10 days or so. But it'll be out in the next week or two.
Did you do the reading on that?
I didn't. I just didn't have the time to do it. But I'm a little concerned because the book has a lot of Italian cardinal names in it and a lot of Latin and obscure things. So I don't know if the reader's going to nail it all. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. Charlie said it'll be good.
All right. So, well, that's exciting.
Yep. Yeah. All right, everybody, pray the rosary. Signing off.